97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
There is unrest in the forest. There is trouble with the trees. For the maples want more sunlight and the oaks ignore their pleas.
It is Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. My name is Bo Matthews alongside Mark Cox and Carl Middleman.
Hi.
This is the show that's going to talk a lot about the outdoors. We're going to talk weather. We're going to talk leaves. We've got experts on that, but we're also going to talk guns. And speaking of guns, this segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. They are the go-to place for silencers. They've got a great way to expedite the process of getting a silencer for your firearm. They've got the silencer shop. They've got them in stock. You can check them out. Check out RazorbackArmory.com and find them in De Pere. Get their address at their website. Tell them Bo sent you into Razorback Armory.
Good stuff, Bo Matthews. We appreciate it. Yeah, I love that Rush song. It's just so much packed into it, right? Talking about society in general and A lot to unfold there for sure. You know, this past week in St. Louis, we had that terrible tragedy at the Performing Arts Academy, the Magnet School in the city, and it's really kind of dominated the headlines. And there's no way to get around the fact that it turned political the same day it happened, and that saddened me so much. The same day it happened, I read the list of comments by people who immediately pivoted to gun control, and it angers me, and it doesn't address the problem, Bo Matthews. I think you know what I'm talking about. This
Absolutely.
Is a mental health issue. By the end of the week, what we had learned was this kid was known to have mental health problems. His parents had called his mother, at least, had called the police on a number of occasions. Channel 4 ran a report on the number of times police had been to that residence. They knew he had a gun, and it was removed from the house and given to another adult member of the house. But Chief Sack admitted that may be the same gun he ended up using in the shooting.
Right.
So there are so many questions here about why somebody with a known mental issues was allowed to continue, was not committed, was allowed to continue having a gun. And I mean, this is a dilemma for police. It's a dilemma for our society. And what did the school know about this kid? He graduated from there, but they haven't opened the records up. We have no idea what they knew and when they knew it.
Well, in the evidence that he left behind, like the note, it said so much. He was, you know, of being, you know, no social life, no girlfriend ever. It just goes to show that, you know, the phones that we carry around, so many people keep their nose in their phones. You know, you got perfectly good humans around you can talk with. But when people are just so secluded, like we've been for the last couple of years, almost three years, it does wear on people, but in different ways. So to the point of the parents doing what they could to prevent, you know, an issue because they were scared of that. Because I have family members that have a son that is, you know, is disturbed and got a lot of issues going on. They worry every single night they go to bed.
And if I had to make a bet with you right now, my bet would be that they have experienced a tremendous amount of difficulty getting him the help that he needs.
Absolutely.
We had an experience, an acquaintance that this happened to. And the problem was finding a facility that would take this person in for treatment. And getting a screening wasn't easy. So we've got to address these mental health issues in this country and take it seriously and figure out a way to adjudicate this quickly and get warning signs into the system. But that wouldn't even have stopped this, because there's no evidence this kid got this gun legally. What might have stopped it is if the guards at the school had been armed. And kudos to Kevin Killeen, reporter down the hall here at KMOX. You may be listening to Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors on KMOX this weekend. Kevin Killeen went to the news conference this week, and he's the only one willing to ask those hard questions. Let's listen to it, Carl.
Love that guy.
But DeAndre, the first officer who encountered the intruder, was that an officer who was not armed? He was not armed, sir.
And maybe this is a question for the Board of Education, too. Is this something that you'll be reviewing going forward, whether the inside the school officers could make a difference in a day like yesterday if they had a gun to stop an intruder?
Yeah, the security chief, take note, would not answer that question. The school board president came up and gave a very political answer. And his political answer was, well, we have debates every day about having guns in the school, even on guards, because it might make some kids uncomfortable. And my point to them, Bo, is what would make them more uncomfortable? Having a good guy with a gun in the school,
right,
or a bad guy with a gun in camouflage and tack gear coming through the front door shooting at them? This is not something that should be left up to the students. This is when the adults in the room have to stand up and say, wait a minute, we had 7 security people in the building. They did all they could do. They set off the intruder alarm. They made sure the doors were locked. But at the end of the day, the guy gained access anyway and shot up the school. If those 7 officers had been armed, he would have met resistance before he ever got in the door.
Absolutely.
And that didn't happen. And the school board will not even consider it because of the politics in the St. Louis City schools. In St. Charles, they have an armed police officer in every school building.
And that makes sense because sure. of the environment that we're in. After you hear about stores out of Uvalde or wherever, it's frightening to know that could be a possibility. But this just also proves that you can't stop anybody from getting a weapon. Now, if this kid didn't have an access to a gun, what would he have done with a knife or a sword or something like that? Because that's issues in like Europe. But I think the mental illness thing, again, kudos to his parents for really trying to do the right thing. It just wasn't enough. And hats off to the police department for getting there so quickly. But you know what? Like you just said, it could have ended even sooner had there been a good guy with a gun, because it's just something you don't expect. However, the other interesting thing is, and I didn't have to grow up in the era of doing live shooter drills in schools. We did,
right.
You know, we did earthquakes, we did, you know, floods, tornado warning drills. But to think that your kids now have to go through active shooter drills is frightening. And I saw, you know, we all watched a bunch of the footage of it because it was right here in St. Louis. What was it? Miles Davis is in the building. That was their code to the students.
I did hear that.
And I thought, well, an interesting way to alert the children. But even when that happens, it's like, okay, I heard the tornado warning. Is it really going to hit me? And that was the warning word that they used for the students.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I have a lot of friends who are police officers. And what I hear is that when they responded to this school, and again, I can't say enough about the courage of the officers who responded to this. Many of them did not have their full uniforms on. The stories I'm hearing were that they were tripping over each other to be the first ones to get in the door to engage this guy.
Wow.
He had killed the teacher. He had already killed the student. His gun jammed. He ended up in another room. The officers trapped him in that room. He started firing at the door frame. They couldn't get through the door because of he was firing at the door frame. So they fired into the wall next to him. He was back in a corner of a room by himself, and that distracted him. And when he turned around to look at the wall where the drywall was flying all over him, the officers breached the room and put him down. And right. I couldn't be more proud of how those officers reacted. I just
absolutely.
I can't say enough about them. This was the 110%, 180 degree opposite of Uvalde.
It really was. And, you know, I had a conversation with Sheriff Marshak, and he said, you know, really, when it comes down to the nuts and bolts of a live shooter situation, really, there's only about 20% of officers that will really walk into that fire. And so for those of you that did walk into it and go after it, we cannot thank you enough for what you do. And you strap on that uniform every day, and God forbid you have to do anything like this. My goodness, how frightening.
Yeah, it really is. And then, of course, through the course of the week, the national conversation pivoted to look at the gun. They released a picture of the gun. And look at all of the ammunition. And I can't let this opportunity go by without making a comment on that. How much ammunition I own is nobody's business.
Exactly.
If I own 1,000 rounds, which I don't, and I routinely go to the range and shoot, I'm going to go through that in the course of a year. But if I don't shoot that much, I may not need that many. Now, I don't know where this kid got that many rounds of ammunition, quite frankly, because it's not cheap. He had to procure it somewhere. It's not cheap to get that much ammunition. But the amount of ammo he had is irrelevant to the situation. They had stabbings in Europe recently where more people were killed than died in this school the other day. Now, maybe that's because the gun jammed. I don't know. But the point of it is somebody with ill intent who's got a weapon, nobody's clairvoyant. There's no way 100% proof to stop that. And stopping legal gun owners from having guns certainly isn't going to stop it.
Oh, and a surplus of ammo. I mean, yes. You know, we had Jesse on from Razorback a few weeks ago talking about how much ammo, you know, somebody should have. It's really a personal preference. It really is. Whether it's 100 rounds, Do you think that's a lot? Or is it 10,000 rounds?
True.
It all depends.
It's a good point.
Anyway.
Hey, coming up, we got Jennifer Benkin joining us. She's a forester with the Missouri Department of Conservation. She's going to tell you exactly where to go this weekend if you want to see the best beautiful fall colors. It's all coming up on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
If you want to drive a big limousine, I'll buy the longest one you've ever seen. I'll buy you tall, tall trees and all the waters in the seas. I'm a fool, fool, fool for you.
Oh, yeah. Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. There's Alan Jackson. Wow, what a legend that guy is. And Tall, Tall Trees. What a great song. Mark Cox, Bo Matthews, Carl Middleman, our executive producer, setting things up. And he got us a good guest because this is the time of the year people like to get out and go for a Sunday drive, even on a Friday afternoon or a Saturday morning or whatever. Jennifer Benkin is a community forester for the Southeast Regional Office of the Missouri Department of Conservation to talk about the sightseeing that we have in our beautiful region of this country. Welcome to the show, ma'am. How are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm doing wonderful this morning. Thank you.
So what does a community forester do? Just wait to report on the leaves for us?
Well, but amongst many things, we do get a lot of questions from people in residential areas, whether it's a homeowner or whether it's a city leader. And so as foresters, what we do is we try to recommend good tree planting practices, good tree care management, trying to talk about sustainable urban canopies, sick tree questions, get a lot of tree health things. And as you can imagine, people also have a lot of questions about some of the species we have that are turning fall colors.
Yeah, it's true. You know, Jennifer, Mark Cox here. Great to meet you. I saw several people on social media, for what that's worth, particularly Facebook, commenting on how gorgeous the leaves were this year, and they all seemed surprised by it because we had had, I don't know if we were officially in a drought, but certainly we went a long time without a great deal of rain. Did that help or hurt, or what's your take on the fact that we've just had some beautiful scenery this year?
Oh, absolutely. I can understand why there is some uncertainty as to what the fall color forecast, because it does fluctuate on some different factors when you look at the environment. One of them most certainly is rainfall. We want to know how healthy the trees are and the abundant amount of foliage, because what happens is if the trees don't get enough rain, then they go into dormancy a little earlier. And we did have some species that really didn't have some of the exuberant fall color that we normally see. Some things like our cottonwoods and our sycamore trees and our silver maples are ones that just didn't have such as much of a showy color this year because they just decided that they were done with the growing season and ended early. However, there are other species that did tend to hang on, and it's also because we've also had some other weather patterns. While it's been dry, really the warm, sunny days that we've had and the cooler nights at night are the things that really make some of the vibrancy that we see in our fall colors. And we've had several weeks of that. So what that does is it traps these extra sugars within the tree. And so when you have those cooler nights, along with the different sunlight that we have with the days getting shorter, those are the things that start to prompt fall color. And so we still have other trees out there that have had really nice fall color due to having the sunny days and cooler night trend that we've had for a while.
Nice.
Jennifer Benkin is our guest. She's a community forester for the Southeast Regional Office of the Missouri Department of Conservation on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. You know, I always recommend and I always search for myself a high point that I can see far, because man, when you can get a distance to see the colors changing, I mean, they're great in your own backyard, but if you can see a lot at one time, you can really see the palette of what the good Lord can do. And so would you say, Jennifer, are we past the peak yet?
I would say in some cases in the state, there is some fluctuation between a week or two, just dependent on those weather patterns and some of the tree species of different trees that we see on the landscape, as you had said. I will say that I think overall within the state trend, I think we are a week or two earlier than we normally would. Typically, we would see that peak time right around this time or even a little prior or a little later. I would say that some are at the peak season, and you do have some places in the region that are starting to go past that peak season. And it is dependent on the tree species. You try to capture as many species as possible, the ones that are good in giving us the most fall color. Some trees have already said we're done for the year, and we also have some trees that say, well, this is the perfect time of year to get out. So if I was going to make a recommendation for people to do and enjoy the fall colors, it would be now for the majority of us. Either we are at peak or we are starting to get past that peak season.
Yeah, it's a good point. Jennifer, so it's, you know, this show, people are listening to us on a Saturday or a Sunday of this weekend. If you had to give the best advice, is there a region in Missouri right now that's better, that might be peaking this weekend? Because you obviously know the types of trees that are giving us the best bouquet of colors right now and where the majority of those would be located in the state of Missouri. What would your advice be?
Oh, that's a great question. We do have different community foresters that also put in weekly fall color reports on our website. So they're the ones that give the most local updates when it comes to looking at colors statewide. I would truly say that most anywhere in the state is going to be a good time, no matter where you go at this point. Really, what you're talking about is when we're going along the river bluffs and these forested hillsides and these beautiful tree landscapes, no matter if it's going to be at a state park or whether you're driving on the highway or an interstate. There are pretty much anywhere in the state, I think you will find quite an enjoyment of fall color at this time.
Okay, I got a question for you. You know, in the Farmer's Almanac, sure, they talk about the fat on the back of a hog to predict a hard or soft winter or whatever it is, or the persimmon. If you crack it open, you can tell, you know, if it's going to be a fork or a spoon, a lot of snow, little snow. Do leaves changing also help us predict what the weather's going to be like or the winter's going to be like moving forward?
Well, I could say that would be a good question. I don't necessarily think so. I think it's more of an indicator as to what kind of growing season that we've had. If we've had a lot of rain and we've had good weather where it puts on abundant foliage, and then when we have those seasons where if it gets really dry, like you said, the leaves tend to curl up and just kind of go into dormancy early. But as those being indicators for the next year, not to my knowledge.
Wow. I didn't know. I assume like Bo did, that would have played some sort of a role in that expectation. But probably it's the weather before they change that is the greatest indicator and not what's coming down the road then, right?
Well, yes. What trees do is when they lose their leaves in the fall, what's happening is what a lot of our hardwood trees or deciduous trees we have here in Missouri, the greatest thing that they have to overcome is water loss and damage due to really cold temperatures. And that's why they shut off photosynthesis, and that's what gives us the other pigmentations that we see in leaves, is because we don't have that green because they're not growing anymore. But what they're also doing whenever they lose their leaves in the fall is they're setting the bud for the next growing season as well. And they stay in, those buds have scales on them that basically protects that tree to have good leaves and a good situation to be able to grow and thrive in the springtime and next growing season. So yeah, it's part of a tree's and a plant's process.
And here's what I know, and even my neighbor commented on this year. I have this massive oak tree in my backyard. I've lived in this house for 22 years. I don't remember a season since I've lived there where I've had more acorns from that tree than I did this year. And now, is that any indication of anything in terms of too much water, not enough water, maturity of the tree? I mean, the tree is old. I know that.
Yeah, and so it also depends if it's a red oak or a white oak. I would say a lot of the white oak species that I've seen this year have had a really abundant A crop. I've seen a lot of acorns on the ground. And white oaks produce acorns every single year, and red oaks actually produce acorns every other year. So it's only every 2 years you put a bumper crop on. So sometimes that makes a difference for how many acorns you're seeing on the ground, as an example.
Interesting.
You are right in saying that sometimes a maturity does play a role into it. Sometimes when trees get to that point of being over mature, they just don't produce as much very well. Sometimes it is saying that it's had a good growing season and it's had a lot of good set and resources to be able to produce a bumper crop over the year. Every once in a while, if you do have a tree that's starting to get towards the end of its life, sometimes it'll put on a mass amount of acorns or fruits simply to try to propagate itself if it's towards the end of its life. But that is by no means not an indicator necessarily that that particular tree is on the decline.
That's going to cost me a lot of money if that happens. Yeah, I hope that wasn't what it was an indicator of, but anyway.
No, probably not. If you have a healthy tree, if you don't see any decline, or if you don't see any, you know, sawdust or weeping or branch dieback or anything along those lines, it just might say that it was just a really good bumper crop of acorns this year.
Well, from the Missouri Department of Conservation, Jennifer Benkin, this has got to be a dream job for you. At what point did you get involved in forestry in your life?
So growing up, I'm from agricultural country in Illinois, and I spent a lot of time playing in the outdoors and had a really deep appreciation for trees and wanted to see what I could do with that in my future. And I'm continuing to do that. I play with trees. I cut trees down and everything else that has with forestry. And I'm actually going to go plant some trees at a school this afternoon. So I just enjoy every part of it.
Nice. That's awesome. You're certainly knowledgeable about it, and we've enjoyed talking to you about it. Jennifer Benkin, community forester with the Missouri Department, forester, I should say, with the Missouri Department of Conservation. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You bet. Yeah. Nice to get her on here. And, you know, I was asking a personal question there about that oak tree. I'm guessing mine then is a red oak, and I have never seen the number of acorns I saw this year. So to the point that you couldn't walk outside without the risk of getting the top of your skull damaged by the massive amount of acorns dropping, crunching when you step out in the yard. Maybe it's telling me that it's time.
My wife actually said, you know, you might want to move the truck because I'm hearing ding, 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 ding,
maybe it's good for deer season, because the deer like to bunch on those, don't they?
If we only knew the weather for deer season.
Yeah, and then where's Tim?
Oh, I got a guy.
Where's Tim when we need him? Yeah. Just go back and listen to last week's podcast, right? And you can hear Tim Chelsvik talk about that.
Yeah, but I know a guy that knows the weather.
Exactly, and you have his number.
And oh, I see. Carl was trying to tease ahead.
I was teasing
there.
Forwarding.
I'm sorry.
You can also go to our podcast, but you can, if you're going to listen to the next segment, Dave Murray is going to be on.
The one and only, coming out of retirement. Well, not really. He's not. He's like semi-retired.
I guess. He's coming up here in just a couple minutes to talk about the weather, the winter forecast, maybe the fall hunting forecast, if that's what you're interested in. We'll get to Chief Meteorologist Dave Murray coming up. Second Amendment Radio and the great outdoors. That's the part we want you to focus on for the next few minutes, the great outdoors. We have the one and only meteorologist Dave Murray on the phone with us, and thrilled to have him on the show this weekend. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We are doing just fine. Thank you. We were thinking about you last week. We were talking to somebody because obviously he's here in the next month, I guess, actually starting this weekend. A lot of people, it's hunting season for them, and been thinking about the weather. And, you know, we got this big rain this weekend, knocked some of the leaves down. And we thought we should talk to Chief Meteorologist Dave Murray about this.
Well, why not?
Why not? So what do you? So I know that you've already given your big winter forecast at this point, correct?
No, the winter forecast is coming up on the 17th of November.
Okay, so I don't know. For some reason I had assumed that that was already
winter will be the December, January, February, and I always like to get through October before I really start to finish the ideas for winter. October tells us some tremendous signs in overall patterns, not necessarily the day-to-day weather, but in weather patterns that are setting up across North America. October is really, really important.
Well, and go ahead, Bo.
I was just going to say, it's kind of how difficult it is to put together your voter guide, Mark, for the voters. You got to wait to a certain point, man.
I got to wait till I can kind of get a feel for what in the world is going on out there.
Yeah, does yes mean no, or does no mean yes?
Well, in the last week, it was 80, then 40.
And so, in the 30s in some places.
Most
crazy.
People had a good hard freeze with that cold snap, and then we bounced. We went from well below average to well above average in the course of 6 days. And that's not that unusual in late October, certainly not unusual in November, and that's what we should continue to see. Obviously, the step down to cold really accelerates in the month of November, but I am anticipating more big swings in temperature. Maybe not quite as severe as we saw last week, but there's going to be some swings, like a whiplash as far as the weather is concerned. Go, wow, how did that happen? You know, kind of thing.
Well, Dave Murray, we actually heat with wood at our house, and last year we waited until December 1st to have the first fire in the fireplace, and actually this past week I burnt two nights because it was so chilly, and you know, a lot of people want to go to their thermostat, but you've got, like Mark Cox has some of his voter's guide prepared. Do you have some things prepared yet, or are you really just holding off until November?
As far as winter, no, I still, I got 3 weeks or so before I have to put that together. I really put it together, and I don't like to rush it. It's one of these things that I have a system for doing it. I have an idea of where I'm going with it, and I can tell you this is that folks who live in the upper Midwest, the Great Lakes, the Northeast, and probably the Ohio Valley, it's going to be a brutally cold winter.
Wow.
Now, what that does for us is that puts us right on the edge. And that's a concern with it. And typically, I think I've told this story before, but typically with these long-range forecasts, it will be put to bed about a week before we actually release it. And then what I do is there'll be times when I'll wake up in the middle of the night, or I'll be walking the dogs, and I'll think, do I really want to go that way? Or did I consider this, or did I not consider, kind of thing. And sometimes I make a switch, sometimes I don't. But there are little things when it comes to the long-range forecasting that it's not cast in stone until you release it.
So it's just coincidence then, Dave, that the Farmer's Almanac comes out on November 13th.
Oh, I'm
just joking. I thought you were waiting for resource material then.
No, I'm just kidding.
So between
a lot of the Farmer's Almanac is based on sunspot theory, just so you know.
Yeah, that's not bad.
you have to consider that. There's no question about it.
So between now and November 17th, like I'm thinking for in terms of people who are wondering what the weather's going to be like for the next month. Because I think this weekend might be youth deer hunting season, and it's already been a little bit of bow season and things like that around here. Can you just look ahead to the next month? What are you expecting between now and then?
Again, the step down to cold. I do think November is going to be a wet month, which, is not best deal for hunting, but it's a good deal for going into winter because things have been so dry, even with the rain that we've had in the last week. I think we'll see a very active storm path start to develop across the nation, and that should make us our rainfall a little bit above average. Would not be surprised to see a little bit of light snow. I don't anticipate a lot of snow in November, but a little bit of light snow flurries the last 8 days of the month, something like that. And, temperature-wise, I think we'll have some, average right now is about 63 degrees for a high temperature. So it's cooling down, and it's cooling down quickly, and that will be the trend in November. So there's going to be some cold weather, no question about it, but I also think there could be some days in November where we're in the 70s. And I'm not a hunter per se, but I the way I understand, I've talked to a lot of hunters, they kind of like these big swings. They like the cold air rushing in and kind of gets the animals moving.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. Bo?
Yeah, I was going to ask, it seemed like a fairly, I know it was destructive, but a fairly quiet hurricane season for the year, other than Ian, which was, that was horrible for so many people.
Does
that make your forecasting more difficult? Because, I picture, cake batter being spinned up even more. Does that make a difference?
Not necessarily, though the hurricane season certainly comes into play with the fall forecast, but it also comes into play with the winter forecast of what's going on. I do not think the hurricane season is over yet. The season itself runs until the end of November. There are some indications come around Veterans Day that there could be a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico again. That's a long, long way off. I don't think the hurricane, it has been quiet. There's no question about it.
Even
in quiet seasons, you can have very destructive hurricanes, and we've proven that once again. But I don't think we've put the tropics to bed yet.
That's good. I'm pretty sure, and I was looking back through it here and haven't come across it yet, but I was pretty sure I saw, Dave, you posted something regarding hurricane season up on Facebook recently.
Yes. Yeah, Murray's Weather, if anybody's interested, you can go to that.
Yeah.
But it is still, I think that post is still up.
Oh, good. And basically, just to highlight that post again, your point was, it was hurricane season. It was not a severe hurricane season by any stretch of the imagination. But I wanted to ask you, it's pretty interesting. A lot of national pundits, not meteorologist types, but a lot of national pundits, immediately pivoted to climate change and wanted to blame the severity of Hurricane Ian on that, I think. And some meteorologists pushed back on that. Where do you stand on that issue?
No, I definitely push back on it. I mean, every hurricane season can have a storm like Ian. And we have to remember that that part of Florida does not get hit very often. And the growth, the problem with jumping on climate change on everything. First of all, it starts to sound like, crying wolf all the time. But there are definitely cycles in weather patterns, and that's what I am. I tend to be a cyclist when it comes to long-term forecasting and long-term events and which way we are headed. But the growth, the population growth in that area, the population growth has just been exponentially exploding down there. So you are going to have some tremendous damage when a storm like that comes in. And it was a large storm. It wasn't like, Andrew was a Cat 5, but it was a really condensed storm system. Ian was not. It was a broad-based storm that happens. And there were also a lot of people who have moved to Florida, that part of Florida, since the last major hurricane in that part of the state. And I do think that in some cases people were not as prepared as they should have been. You get a little lax in saying, oh, well, we're never going to get hit by a hurricane. Well, you are. You're in Florida. You are at some point going to get hit by a hurricane.
Yeah, it's a good
point. So it's a cycle. These are cycles that we go through, and we've gone through cycles ever since we've been forecasting weather, ever since there's been weather.
Looking back on your long career, Dave, were you ever the guy that was sent to stand in the middle of one of those and hang onto a telephone pole as it blew through?
No, but I did. I have flown into a hurricane. That was during my Good Morning America years, and I covered Hurricane Opal, which was in the 90s down in the panhandle of Florida. Mm-hmm. Did not do the let's stand out and see if the wind can blow me away, but it was more of the biggest thing once you get on the ground with a hurricane like an Opal or you know any kind of really like Cat 3 or higher is the amount of destruction right along the coast, and you can move maybe a quarter of a mile inland, and the destruction is 70% less than what you see on the coast.
Second Amendment Radio and the great outdoors. That's the part we want you to focus on for the next few minutes, the great outdoors. We have the one and only meteorologist, Dave Murray, on the phone with us and thrilled to have him on the show this weekend. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We are doing just fine. Thank you. We were thinking about you last week. We were talking to somebody because obviously he's here in the next month, I guess, actually starting this weekend. A lot of people, it's hunting season for them, and they've been thinking about the weather. And, you know, we got this big rain this weekend, knocked some of the leaves down. And we thought we should talk to Chief Meteorologist Dave Murray about this.
Well, why not?
Why not? So what do you? So I know that you've already given your big winter forecast at this point, correct?
No, the winter forecast is coming up on the 17th of November.
Okay, so I don't know. For some reason I had assumed that that was already
winter will be the December, January, February, and I always like to get through October before I really start to finish the ideas for winter. October tells us some tremendous signs in overall patterns, not necessarily the day-to-day weather, but in weather patterns that are setting up across North America, October is really, really important.
Well, and go ahead, Bo.
I was just going to say, it's kind of how difficult it is to put together your voter guide, Mark, for the voters. You got to wait to a certain point, man.
I got to wait till I can kind of get a feel for what in the world is going on out there.
Yeah, does yes mean no, or does no mean yes?
Well, in the last week, it was 80, then 40.
And so in the 30s in some places.
Most
crazy.
People had a good hard freeze with that cold snap, and then we bounced. We went from well below average to well above average in the course of 6 days. And that's not that unusual in late October, certainly not unusual in November, and that's what we should continue to see. Obviously, the step down to cold really accelerates in the month of November, but I am anticipating more big swings in temperature. Maybe not quite as severe as we saw last week, but there's going to be some swings, like a whiplash as far as the weather is concerned. Go, wow, how did that happen? You know, kind of thing.
Well, Dave Murray, we actually heat with wood at our house, and last year we waited until December 1st to have the first fire in the fireplace, and actually this past week I burnt two nights because it was so chilly, and you know, a lot of people want to go to their thermostat, but you've got, like Mark Cox has some of his voter's guide prepared. Do you have some things prepared yet, or are you really just holding off until November?
As far as winter, no, I still, I got 3 weeks or so before I have to put that together. I really put it together, and I don't like to rush it. It's one of these things that I have a system for doing it. I have an idea of where I'm going with it, and I can tell you this is that folks who live in the upper Midwest, the Great Lakes, the Northeast, and probably the Ohio Valley, it's going to be a brutally cold winter.
Wow.
Now,
yeah.
What that does for us is that that puts us right on the edge, and that's a concern with it. And typically, I think I've told this story before, but typically with these long-range forecasts, it will be put to bed about a week before we actually release it. But and then what I do is there'll be times when I'll wake up in the middle of the night, or I'll be walking the dogs, and I'll think, do I really want to go that way? Or did I consider this, or did I not consider, you know, kind of thing. And sometimes I make a switch, sometimes I don't. But there are little things when it comes to the long-range forecasting that it's not just, it's not cast in stone until you release it.
So it's just coincidence then, Dave, that the Farmer's Almanac comes out on November 13th.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
I'm just joking. I thought you were waiting for resource material. Then I'm just kidding.
No, I'm just kidding.
So between
a lot of the Farmer's Almanac is based on sunspot theory. Just so you know.
Yeah, that's not bad.
No, you have to consider that. There's no question about it.
So between now and November 17th, like I'm thinking, for in terms of people who are wondering what the weather's going to be like for the next month. Because I think this weekend might be youth deer hunting season, and it's already been a little bit of bow season and things like that around here. Can you just look ahead to the next month? What are you expecting between now and then?
Yeah, again, the step down to cold. I do think November is going to be a wet month, which, you know, is not best deal for hunting, but it's a good deal for going into winter because things have been so dry, even with the rain that we've had in the last week. I think we'll see a very active storm path start to develop across the nation, and that should make us our rainfall a little bit above average. Would not be surprised to see a little bit of light snow. I don't anticipate a lot of snow in November, but a little bit of light snow flurries the last 8 days of the month, something like that. And, you know, temperature-wise, I think we'll have some, you know, average right now is about 63 degrees for a high temperature. So it's cooling down, and it's cooling down quickly, and that will be the trend in November. So there's going to be some cold weather, no question about it, but I also think there could be some days in November where we're in the 70s. And I'm not a hunter per se, but I the way I understand, I've talked to a lot of hunters, they kind of like these big swings. They like the cold air rushing in and kind of gets the animals moving.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. Bo?
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, it seemed like a fairly, I know it was destructive, but a fairly quiet hurricane season for the year, other than Ian, which was, that was horrible for so many people.
Does
that make your forecasting more difficult? Because, I mean, I picture, you know, cake batter being spinned up even more. Does that make a difference?
Not necessarily, though the hurricane season certainly comes into play with the fall forecast, but it also comes into play with the winter forecast of what's going on. I do not think the hurricane season is over yet. The season itself runs until the end of November. There are some indications come around Veterans Day that there could be a hurricane in the Gulf of Mexico again. That's a long, long way off. It has been quiet. There's no question about it.
Even
in quiet seasons, you can have very destructive hurricanes, and we've proven that once again. But I don't think we've put the tropics to bed yet.
That's good. You know, I'm pretty sure, and I was looking back through it here and haven't come across it yet, but I was pretty sure I saw, Dave, you posted something regarding hurricane season up on Facebook recently.
Yes. Yeah, Murray's Weather, if anybody's interested, you can go to that.
Yeah.
But it is still, I think that post is still up.
Oh, good. And basically, I mean, just to highlight that post again, your point was, yeah, it was hurricane season. It was not a severe hurricane season by any stretch of the imagination. But I wanted to ask you, it's pretty interesting. A lot of national pundits, not meteorologist types, but a lot of national pundits, immediately pivoted to climate change and wanted to blame the severity of Hurricane Ian on that, I think. And some meteorologists pushed back on that. Where do you stand on that issue?
No, I definitely push back on it. I mean, every hurricane season can have a storm like Ian. And we have to remember that that part of Florida does not get hit very often. And the growth, the problem with jumping on, you know, climate change on everything. First of all, it starts to sound like, you know, crying wolf all the time. But there are definitely cycles in weather patterns, and that's what I am. I tend to be a cyclist when it comes to long-term forecasting and long-term events and which way we are headed. But the growth, the population growth in that area, the population growth has just been exponentially exploding down there. So you are going to have some tremendous damage when a storm like that comes in. And it was a large storm. It wasn't like, you know, Andrew was a Cat 5, but it was a really condensed storm system. Ian was not. It was a broad-based storm that happens. And you know, anybody, and there were also a lot of people who have moved to Florida, that part of Florida, since the last major hurricane in that part of the state. And I do think that in some cases people were not as prepared as they should have been. You know, you get a little lax in saying, oh, well, we're never going to get hit by a hurricane. Well, you are. You're in Florida. You are at some point going to get hit by a hurricane.
Yeah, it's a good
point. So it's a cycle. These are cycles that we go through, and we will go through cycles. We've gone through cycles ever since we've been forecasting weather, ever since there's been weather.
Looking back on your long career, Dave, were you ever the guy that was sent to stand in the middle of one of those and hang onto a telephone pole as it blew through?
No, but I did. I have flown into a hurricane. That was during my Good Morning America years, and I covered Hurricane Opal, which was in the 90s down in the panhandle of Florida. Mm-hmm. did not do the let's stand out and see if the wind can blow me away. But it was more of the biggest thing once you get on the ground with a hurricane like an Opal or you know, any kind of really like Cat 3 or higher, is the amount of destruction right along the coast. And you can move maybe a quarter of a mile inland, and the destruction is 70% less than what you see on the coast.
Wow! Now, Florida, I always love when the tourists are walking behind the reporter with their shopping bags. Or
that's right. Yeah,
kind of unfortunate.
are they out? You know, holding onto that phone pole, and a car goes driving by.
Yeah, never fails. Or the guy's in a boat. I remember the video, the guy in the boat
NBC
reporting,
reporter.
And then somebody walks by behind him with like galoshes on. It was it was pretty fun. you got to be careful in those live shots.
Oh yes, you do. So, and remember, it's all on tape.
Yes, everything is recorded. Just like your mic is always on, right, Dave?
That's right. The rule? Yeah, you never ever forget that.
So, again, just to remind people, November 17th is when I think you told me you're gonna bring out your full winter forecast, and you always debut that, I believe, on the Dave Glover Show. Is that correct?
Right. Yes, on KMOX. It'll be at 4:05 in the afternoon at on the 17th, and then shortly after that, probably about 20 minutes later, I post it on my Facebook page again, Dave Murray's Weather, and the whole thing is there. It's actually, yeah, we kind of do a condensed version on Glover's show, and then the full-blown text is there, and it's usually 7-8 pages long.
You say a dense version on the Glover show?
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. You know that.
So the fat of the back of a hog. So the fat of the back of a hog does not predict weather. The persimmon, fork, or spoon does not predict the weather in your forecast.
No, but
correct?
It's always fun. But it's always fun. It's always fun to do the persimmon. I have done that for years and years and years, and every year it's a spoon. But what I always warn people probably saying, you know, wait a minute, what's the persimmon thing? You take the seed of a persimmon. First of all, it has to be a local persimmon. If you're buying one in the grocery store, you don't know where
it
came from.
Not going to work, right.
So it will work, but it may work where that persimmon grew. But cutting open a persimmon seed is not an easy thing to do. And, and be very, very careful. If you use a razor blade, just fair warning.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, I'll be butchering the hog on the 13th of November, so then I can share my information with you.
That's good. I take that in, Bo. I take that. You know, there is nothing that I don't look at when it comes to really everything. You know, when making even a short-term forecast, it's when I would drive into work, it would be, I'm looking at the clouds, I'm looking at the trees, I'm looking at right. how birds are reacting and things like that. And if you don't do that, then you're leaving a lot on the table.
Yeah. Dave Murray, we love your passion for the weather of this planet and more importantly, this region. We thank you very much. And we wish you a happy holidays. And maybe we'll get you on in the middle of winter and go, Dave, save us.
Let's do it. Happy holidays to you guys, too.
All right. Thank you. Meteorologist Dave Murray there. Great to get him on here and some of his expertise on the whole thing. Isn't that great? Funny
question
guy.
Is,
and he takes everything tongue-in-cheek, which I appreciate, too.
I always bring up the hog fat on the back of the hog, all that stuff. But the big question is, I grew up in Minnesota, which they've already had a couple of snows. Do you have to wear a coat over your costume on Halloween? That's the predictor.
Poor kids, I know. We forgot to ask him what the weather was going to be like for Halloween. I'm sure
that's Monday.
We got our kid, when she was little, her grandmother spent a lot of money on a Tigger costume, and it was 75 degrees that day. The poor kid had sweat rolling, trickling off her nose. It was never fails.
That's awesome.
All right. Well, that does it for this edition of a Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors.
And another airing of the show begins, this week or next week?
This 7 week.
7 a.m. on Saturdays?
Sundays.
Sundays?
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
We're on all weekend.
We are on not only 97.1, but KMOX as well.
You'll be able to find us for sure. For Mark Cox and Carl Middleman, my name is Bo Matthews. Thank you for listening. Share the show. Share the podcast of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Have a great weekend. See you, boys.
Get more at 97.1talk.com.